Hello, everyone. I'm Anca Corbin, your host on this Moving Fast Tech podcast. I'd like to welcome Dr. Erica Knoll-Webb, the Senior Research Manager at Docker today. Most of you know what Docker is, but for a few listeners who might not be sure, since this is all around the world, Docker is a leading platform designed to help developers build, share, and run modern applications. So basically, they handle the tedious stuff so you can focus on the code. Welcome, Erica, and thank you very much for joining me today on this Moving Fast Tech podcast and just sharing your thoughts.
Yeah, nice to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with the folks on your channel.
Awesome. So today we're going to talk about user research, user experience, and kind of the interaction with engineering and product and things like that. So, you know, the Moving Fast Tech podcast, it's a free-flowing format where I'm going to just ask you some questions, and it's definitely up to you where you'd like to take this discussion. So let's get started. Why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about yourself and your journey and what you're focused on now at Docker?
Excellent. So I kind of came up from some of the original user experience research groups. I went to graduate school actually for cognitive neuropsychology. I studied how the left and right hemispheres of the brain processed information differently. And at a certain point, I was like, not really sure where I'm going with this. So I went into business with a couple of folks that I knew who were doing user research at the time, originally mostly for Hewlett-Packard, but then we kind of built out a user research firm back in the day when most companies didn't really have internal groups. If they had internal groups, they were pretty small. So they were kind of regularly outsourcing their research needs when they realized they needed to understand their users better and build things around what the user experience was. So I've gone from doing small company consulting with various companies of different sizes. I spent about 11 years, a little over 11 years with Oracle Applications User Experience Group. So I'm working on big enterprise software tools for users. And from there, I've had a couple of mixed bag jumps where I've worked for some financial firms like Charles Schwab. I've worked for more industry specific places like NetApp and now Docker, very deep in the developer community, Twilio. So the last couple of positions I've had have been very developer-y focused instead of kind of mainstream user types. And so here I am at Docker. And one of the things that we've been doing is I've spent the last year plus building out a user research program, figuring out how to get in touch with customers and users and building a team. So we went from kind of just me to now I have three other researchers located between the US and Europe. And I have an intern starting this summer. So we're kind of building up user research inside of Docker and how to kind of answer those questions about what Docker might need to know about people who are using the system and what we can do to make the experience better for all developers.
That's awesome. You know, a lot of our listeners work at what I would consider early stage, maybe, you know, growth stage companies. And certainly there are some at larger companies like Amazon and things like that. But one of the things that we were curious about is, what might be some ways that Docker is used differently by startups or growth companies versus some of the larger companies?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting because we've been talking a lot about how we position certain things for different size companies. So there are some new products that we are looking to offer or are currently releasing that have more of a mid-size growth opportunity. So for example, one that we've been looking at a lot lately is Docker Scout, which is focused on how do you have a secure supply chain. Enterprise companies kind of already have thought of that. They've built in different tools, but Docker Scout gives us an opportunity to kind of get in there with sort of the mid-size and growth companies where they've built enough of a team that they're now a little bit more focused on how do they make sure that they've secured their supply chain and what would make that work better. So we are keeping an eye out on different things like that. A larger company is more likely to use multiple environments. Docker gives them the ability to build a CI/CD pipeline that's going to automate deployment. Smaller startups might just use it so that they can kind of easily reuse some components in multiple ways, again, without having to be concerned about passing it off to the person whose machine is not necessarily set up the way their machine is, or their environments aren't the same, or they're not on the same Python version. That's one of the huge advantages to containerizing, is that, you know, back in the day, it might work on my machine, and the minute I handed it over to somebody else, it wouldn't work on their machine. Now my code within a container runs everything you need to know to make this work on any machine. So that container concept allows all companies to do a lot of things kind of quicker and more efficiently, but especially in some of, as the company builds a development team, that ability to kind of pass one container to another group or build within a container and then add that to the CI/CD pipeline, it is really gives companies a lot of ability to do things faster and more efficiently.
Right. We think that the whole process around CI/CD has definitely changed development in a great way, right?
It's
very, very helpful. You know, when you think about user research and, you know, understanding the journey of your of a customer for an earlier stage company, how might they gain insights affordably and quickly? So this is really not necessarily only your Docker hat, but as you're, you know, as being an expert in the field, what are some things that they could do to just understand their users more?
Yeah, it's actually kind of a constant problem, regardless of the size of your organization. How do I get in touch with my users and understand what it is that they're trying to do and make sure that what I'm building meets their needs? Simplest and easiest answer is talk to anyone. Figure out how you can reach out to a customer. Maybe you have a customer who's new, you might want to talk to them about the onboarding experience and what worked for them and what didn't work for them. If you have a smaller company, you may have an easier, honestly, way of reaching out to a lot of your customers, because as a smaller company, you kind of know who each of those people are and how to reach out to them. Larger companies start to build a participant database. They start trying to recruit users, trying to figure out who are users who might be interesting to you, who are in the space you care about. Number one thing I think is an issue when you're trying to talk to any kind of user is that you want to spend most of your time listening. You don't want to be proposing solutions. You want to dig into what has their experience been. And then if they say, well, I always find this difficult, for example, you don't want to go, oh, we have a solution for that, because then you're not hearing what the problem is. What you really need to do is step back at that point and say, tell me more about that. And if they then elaborate, it gives you an opportunity to kind of pick some of those details and say, when you say you have trouble with X, can you tell me what that trouble is? Can you tell me what that difficulty is? And spend most of your time listening to try and understand what it is that they're thinking about, needing, wanting, instead of jumping to any kind of conclusion about they must mean this. Because what you'll discover, the more you can not talk in one of those interviews, the more the user will tell you that will possibly lead to things you didn't expect. Instead of kind of constantly trying to propose a solution, listen to what they're telling you is an issue for them. You can also put designs out in front of people. We're running this in a Zoom meeting. I set up Zoom meetings with users all the time. I can present a design concept, a prototype. I can ask them about how they would do certain things. I can give them access to my mouse to control a prototype or share a prototype with them and get feedback about what's working for them, what's not working for them. You know, back in the day, we used to have usability labs with one-way glass, and you could have people in the back room, and you recruited people to come into the building and work with you. Now, we don't have that barrier. Anybody, anywhere can reach out to a user and have a discussion with them over one platform or another, Zoom or Microsoft Teams or Google Meet. It's just that barrier of trying to get to some folks and just asking them about their experience and listening for where there are opportunities for you to do things better. So largely what I would say is startup or large company, the barriers are really dropped. Just try to get some people that you can talk to as often as you can to try and understand what they're trying to do and what you could do to make it better.
That's such great advice. Even a company that doesn't have a research team, right? The engineering team can do this.
Some don't have
product, the product team, or even customer support can be doing this. Marketing can be doing this. Sales can be doing this. Such great advice. And there are no more barriers. It's a really exciting time for understanding customers better.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, sometimes you'll need to incentivize people to give you some feedback, but a lot of people are, especially if you have sort of a new technology and it's exciting and people are really interested in it, you'll get a lot of people who'd be happy to talk to you for free just because they're passionate about it. They want to tell you about their experience and they want the product to be better. So they're happy to tell you about it and what their experience has been. I also try and emphasize for people in user experience, one of the important things to remember is I am not the user. I have studied all kinds of crazy things that are never going to be something I would do. At one point, I was working on trucking satellite systems and I delivered tires in Omaha. And the reality is I'm never going to be a truck driver, I hope. I think I'm going to stay in the technology field, but delivering tires with a truck driver in Omaha gave me an opportunity to see what his experience with the satellite system, where it worked well, where it didn't work well, and just really kind of build an understanding of what we could do to make all of that work better for him. I will regularly say, I am not a developer. I am not going to become a developer, but I can get inside the head of a developer to understand what we could do to make Docker work better for them, even if I'm never going to be the person who's doing that activity. It's more about understanding what's happening with those people and where we could reduce their pain and suffering when they're trying to accomplish certain tasks. How could we make their lives better in what they do?
I think that's a really, really important point to remember, that you don't have to be, and maybe it's actually better not to be part of the organ, you know, the group you're trying to get feedback from, so that you can be more impartial and you can listen better versus, like you had mentioned earlier, jumping to conclusions.
Or solutions.
Yeah.
Like, solutions. Oh, I have that same problem too. Here's what I do.
Right.
You know, if you can, if you're not necessarily part of that group, you can listen to that and be have an easier time of saying things like, that's really interesting. What do you do in that situation? Mm-hmm. Because I don't know. I don't, you know, I can get a pretty clear understanding of what people are trying to do and how they're trying to do it. That's what user research is kind of all about, is really trying to understand users and then translate their issues into what would make a better design or a good design or a good product. But I can stay a little bit more dispassionate. I think sometimes when people are the user they're trying to talk to, they want to make it more of a conversation of how do I solve this problem instead of just listening. Mm-hmm. And listening is really important in user research.
That's great advice. So at Docker, are you currently tracking what cloud platforms, languages, and frameworks are being used most frequently? And has that changed over time?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I'm sure your users have looked at like Stack Overflow, and GitHub puts out an annual survey, and we actually put out a survey in the fall on trying to understand the state of application development with Docker users. And our plan is kind of regularly rerun that. So we're planning that for DockerCon, which right now is slated for this fall, where we would do another round of that so that we can kind of track how things are changing over time. I know the Stack Overflow survey, you can actually see how certain languages and frameworks and platforms have changed over time. We have discovered in just our participant sign up, we ask people for which of these things are you using so that we can kind of see a little bit of that. Right now, we have kind of an even split, for example, between Mac, Windows, and Linux. And we have some overlap in our customer base of people who are using more than one platform. So we can kind of see what those combinations are and how people are using those platforms. We have seen the languages and frameworks tend to move in a way that matches the market in general. So for example, right now, Python's our number one, which is, I'm sure for your users, not going to be surprising. Python is kind of a common way that most people are using programming, but we see things move up, things move down. Java used to be at the top. Now it's moving down on the list. We still have people. It's less prevalent than it used to be. I think it also depends on the type of industry you're in, which what languages and platforms and frameworks you might be using. It is kind of industry driven in some cases. For example, if you have to use legacy code, you're going to program in whatever that legacy code's in. So, some things will probably stay on our lists for an extra special long time just because they are things people are going to continue using over time simply because that's what the organization started with. And some things kind of move up and down. I see in that survey I was just telling you about, we did 54% of our participants in that survey were using JavaScript, 49% were using Python, Node.js came in next, React, C Sharp, which might be kind of surprising, and Java was in there. If we look at that compared to things like the Stack Overflow surveys, we're kind of always curious if our users look like users who are participating in others of those surveys so that we can kind of say, is there something unique about a Docker user? And for the most part, no, our users are kind of using the same things that the developers everywhere are using.
Well, that makes sense since Docker is such an important part of that process. So yeah, that's interesting. So when you think about Docker and the process for you adding new features and doing testing, what does that look like? How do you decide new features? Is there a set pattern for you, or does it depend on the new features?
Yeah, it kind of depends. So we have a public roadmap that anybody can get to on GitHub. You can see things that people have suggested that they want, and you can see if it gets prioritized into our development process by going to GitHub, and you can upvote and downvote things there. We are also obviously kind of constantly looking for what would improve the experience in different areas or different places inside of Docker. So we have different teams who are working on things like developer activation. When somebody first signs up for Docker, how do we get them started in a more efficient way? How do we make sure that we're giving them the kinds of content that would be interesting to them? How do we make sure that that content is tailored to the type of user that they just told us they were when they signed up? On the other hand, we have some things that are for really a more advanced user, somebody who really has a more sophisticated setup. They're a little bit further in, and some of those features we're looking for feedback about what would be useful. Obviously, we have a marketing group who's out trying to understand what are the trends, what are the features that people are asking for. We do a series of surveys out to customers, kind of asking them about things they want or need. And we've got our product managers who are kind of constantly looking at the product and trying to figure out what we should be considering, what we have considered. And so the whole process is a kind of combination of our E-team looking at the state of sort of development in general and what people need and want in development, where we think we have a competitive edge, we might start saying we need to add more features there. And then as we have ideas, we can put those in front of users, testing anything from prototype designs. Literally, like we joke about, sometimes you could do back of the napkin ideas. Like, I just want to get some sense of whether or not this resonates for people. And then that kind of combination of things filters down to lists of things that get prioritized and pushed into product over time. But we also have our quarterly goals, next quarter goals, fourth quarter goals. Like, we have an eyeball on, we're going to try and do this now. That's something we're thinking about down the road. And that's actually one of the things where my team might come in. So a product manager might say, we're thinking about adding this, but we're trying to understand how much need or want there is out there. And then my team can come in and kind of craft, like, how would we get that answer? Where's the best place for us to figure that out? And how do we help the product teams make better decisions about what we invest our development resources on?
That makes a lot of sense. You know, one of the questions I had here for me, it was really, do you personalize user journeys and do you adapt to more tech savvy users? And you had just mentioned that you do indeed ask a lot of questions early on so that that journey can be personalized. Tell me a little bit about, you know, where else you might be doing that.
So we have a set of personas who we think are our kind of prototypical users. And so we know who we think our most common user is. And then we have some things that we're developing that might be a little bit more of a niche user, not niche per se, but compared to anybody who might use Docker. So what we regularly do is we try and dig into of our existing personas. So for example, we have what we would call a mid-level developer. And our mid-level developer is somebody who's not an intro user. They've been a software developer for a while. They've been using Docker for a couple of years. They have a sense of how software development works in a very general way, but we contrast that to our more senior user who has a larger sense of what software development looks like in a global sense. So what we tend to do then is then think about who would be the user we want to target for this particular kind of thing. And who do we think would actually do this? So we talk about, this is an activity that we would expect a platform engineer to do. So here's what we know about platform engineers. We've created personas around these various types. We might then go back every so often and say, okay, let's take a look at that and see if we think that's really still who that persona is and whether their responsibilities have changed. And we're trying to understand on the basis of that, what does that mean we think they do in the software development process? So an example might be an early developer knows how to do some tasks, but they don't necessarily have that mental model of the architecture of how it all fits in together, where a senior developer does. So maybe a senior developer is more likely in certain cases to do debugging or troubleshooting, because some of that requires you to have a little bit more deeper understanding of how it's supposed to work. Like, hard to debug something if you don't know how it's supposed to be working. And so then maybe we take some tools that are around helping you with debugging and we target those for things that we think that more senior developer is going to use or senior developer would understand, and shift some other things over to, this is what we think a more junior developer does. This is what we think a platform engineer does. This is where we think this kind of person fits in. And we try to keep those relatively up to date and fluid, but also it gives just that general sense of like, who are we talking about when we build this feature? Do we think this is something for an early developer? Or do we think it's something that's really more of a senior activity and we're not expecting some people to do this? Maybe they would, but probably not.
All right, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you. So this is the everyone's asking this question. It's all about AI. So
there
are lots of ways of looking at this. How is it affecting research and user experience gathering? How is it affecting you and the company? You know, like, let's take this in a couple of different ways. See what you're only going to share what is okay to share, but what's going on with AI?
Well, so it's interesting because we did just run a hackathon to see internally, what did people think would be good use cases for AI? And as part of a follow-up to that, I've been doing more research with some of our user database. So we've been building up a user database and asking them, like, which of these concepts resonates the most for you? Which would be most useful? What do you think of AI? Are you using AI in your work? Are you using it personally? And so we're trying to get sort of a better sense of, if Docker were to invest in AI in some way, where would be the best bang for the buck? Where do we think our users would find the most value? So I've done a survey of about 100 participants so far to just kind of ask them general questions around, what do you think of AI? Do you find it useful? Do you find it trustworthy? Do you find it complete? Interesting thing is, we found that people find it very useful, but they don't necessarily trust it. They they think it, sure, it helps, but I wouldn't necessarily like stake everything on this answer. So it's been really interesting to dig in a little bit deeper and try and understand how people would want to use it and where do they think it's valuable and what are they using currently? So, you know, we asked, which of the following AI tools do you have some experience with? And no surprise, most people said ChatGPT because that's the one that's hit the largest set of headlines. But there are some very developer-centric AI things like GitHub has, I'm blanking on the name of it, GitHub Copilot is something that helps developers sort of figure out the next line in their CLI. We've been kind of looking at what are things that people think AI could be most useful for. So one thing, for example, that I've run across in both the survey and in conversations with people is, it would be cool to use AI for things that are kind of tedious and replicable, like if that makes sense. Like the structure of this container is always going to have these pieces in it. And then I can go in and customize for my specific use case. But instead of building everything from scratch, build me a basic container that does this. And then I'll go in and customize it and take out things I don't think would work and save me a little time on the stuff that is not where a developer is really, like, really being creative and doing interesting things. It's the stuff that is just your framework that maybe that would be a good use. Save me some time. Anecdotally, I've seen some funny things about AI, like we use various recruiting databases to try and find people to participate. And one of the things that I like to try and do is ask people, what do they use Docker for, to find out if they're really a Docker developer or not. And really quickly after the big ChatGPT announcements, I started finding people where I was like, okay, this isn't what you do. This is what you could do with Docker. And it was so obviously like, ChatGPT, what do you do with Docker? And then pasted it into my survey. So
we've seen that also.
We didn't use it.
We've even seen like answers to questions where every single person had the same answer to the question. And so, you know,
It's a little bit harder to screen people to make sure they're really who you're looking for if you're not aware of the fact that there are some really pat AI answers that are going to come up over and over if they don't really know, but they just looked it up real quick.
Sure. It's always fun to feel like you just answered something really well.
Yeah, it's definitely going to change a lot of things, I think, in terms of how do we detect whether or not something came from an AI or actually from somebody's head. All of that, I think, is one of those things where, you know, everybody calls the end of the world at some point, and then we kind of figure out a system around it. In academics, people were bemoaning years ago, you could buy, you know, internet's gone big, you can buy a term paper off the internet. And then there came out a whole set of tools to help you detect whether or not this particular phrasing, this particular sentence, this particular paragraph showed up on anything anywhere on the internet. And so all of a sudden you've got a plagiarism detector that people could go in and say, this is clearly plagiarized and here's the thing you pulled it from. So it's more to me, the interesting part is that it will initially be hard to detect, but then we'll get better at figuring out what somebody actually did versus what they just looked up.
So true. It's a fun time, I think. So we're starting to get to the end of our interview, and I want to make sure I ask this important question. And so if our listeners want to learn more about just how to better think about user testing, where might they start? What would you suggest that they watch and read? Are there any favorite blogs or podcasts that you pay attention to, or anything out there that you think is just a great resource?
Yeah, I think there's a ton of stuff out there. So, you know, it's almost hard to say. It depends on what exactly you want to know. There are some overview books that I have had for years and I go back to all the time, including a book called Understanding Your Users that just talks about basic methodologies. Courage and Baxter, and they did a rewrite a few years ago. I can't remember who the third author is on the rewrite. That's just a good set of like basic user research techniques, but there's also tons of stuff that you can find. I constantly see new things on LinkedIn from user researchers talking about something that they've recently published. The UXPA, User Experience Professionals Association, has an annual conference, and you can kind of look up what's coming out from there. I find Medium is a great resource. I'm constantly jumping to Medium just to see, because somebody's put it in a nice, easy to like digest, like this is the overview. And then if I want to know more, I might go see who's written a whole book on it. I will say for quantitative research, I used to work with a guy at Oracle who has a company now called Measuring Usability, Measuring You. He has a ton of resources. So if you're trying to figure out, if I were going to do some kind of testing like this, what would be the parameters? If I want to know what's a good NPS score, what's a good SUS score? What are the ranges depending on what your company does? What's a good retail NPS versus a developer NPS? Those are all things you can find on Measuring You. So if I'm looking for quantitative stuff, I'll start there, because quantitative things, if there's something to be said about it, Jeff Soro has probably said something about it at some point. So I'll look at those. There are a lot of books that bridge a little bit into more marketing. Like Anthony Ulwick wrote a book years ago, What Customers Want, which was a way of thinking about what is it that people are trying to do and building accordingly. So he came up with this idea of jobs to be done, and how do you understand what it is that somebody's trying to accomplish? What are the things they want a solution to, which helps you be innovative about not just the next thing we could do with the thing we've already got, but what's an unmet need in the marketplace and how is that unmet, and gives you the ability to unpack, like, what could you do to be more innovative? There are lots of good articles on what makes successful interviewing, what makes successful testing. Like I said, LinkedIn, I often see something I didn't expect on LinkedIn and follow that and see what I get from those things. But there's a wealth out there if you know what it is that you're trying to figure out and you phrase your question well. You can find a ton of information. And some of them you might start to read through and think, this is kind of crap. This person managed to get this published. I don't know how. Others you'll look at and go, oh yeah, that's actually really interesting.
That's awesome. That's fantastic feedback. And I think a lot of really good resources for anyone to jump in and start. So Erica, great insights, super interesting discussion. And I want to thank you very much for sharing your experiences. And I'm sure our listeners will find your insights very interesting. And it's just always a pleasure to talk to you. So thank you very much for being our guest today.
Excellent. And just a plug, if people are interested in participating in Docker user research, you can definitely reach out to me and I will figure out a way to get you involved, because we are always looking for developers who are interested in helping us make the next great thing in Docker.
That's awesome. We'll make sure to post that information on the supporting blog for this when we link in the podcast. So
cool.
Do follow up with Erica if you're interested in being involved in Docker research. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast channel and join us next time for another Moving Fast Tech podcast, where you hear from industry leaders about tech leadership challenges, the latest technology they're considering, and just preparing their company for the future and other interesting tech topics.